Maybe I should get started. Good afternoon. I have the dubious honor of being the last session of what is assuredly a long day between you and a party. So hopefully I do some useful information for you today. So my name is Eric Burkholder. I'm a program manager in an ecosystem team, which delivers ecosystems internally. We've got lots of partner program manager types at Microsoft, and we kind of have two classes of programs. We have folks that are more customer-facing and folks that are more partner-facing and work more closely with the engineering teams, and I'm that latter category. I spend most of my time with ISVs. It doesn't mean I don't talk to customers. It just means I don't get to do it as often. So I'm excited to be here today. It will just be me today. Chris has had something come up. So with that, I thought I'd set the stage for what we're going to do today. Obviously, we're going to talk about Azure Stack. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking, sort of setting the stage for Azure Stack. Why would we do this? And what relationship does it have to Azure? And how should you think about that? And then we'll get a little bit deeper into the opportunities to actually develop software for it. And what those business opportunities are as ISVs, whether we developed software externally for money and we license that software and make that software available to people who don't have the same color employee badge that we do, or whether we develop software for internal customers as part of an IT or DevOps organization within an enterprise. So I guess I don't need to say much about this. We kind of think cloud is inevitable, right? It's born out of that need to say, look, I need 1,000 nodes tomorrow to work on a problem that I didn't know about at the beginning of the year when I planned my budgets, so I have no capital, and I only need it for 3 days. So that idea to quickly get to resources at scale that you only need to pay for while you use them is one of those fundamental tenets. Now, we've grown much, much, much farther than that, but ultimately it boils down to there's a pretty sizable amount of growth going into cloud spend versus on-prem spend. Now, you all know we have a cloud. I'm sure many of you are in it. In fact, I put the placeholder slide in to ask you some questions. First off, how many of you are running any production workload at all in Microsoft Azure? Fair amount. How many of you are running test workloads? If you hadn't run a production workload, how many of you are running some test workloads or doing any DevOps scenarios in Azure? Okay. And I'm assuming you're using regions here in Australia, because we have two. We have regions around the world, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. I did have one other question for you. What are you doing? Developing in? I'm assuming some of you are probably using some Windows tools, our classic Visual Studio, C# kinds of development environments. How many of you are developing on Linux? Anybody? You can be open and honest about it. We're cool with it. Trust me, we're cool with it. How about Java, Node, you know, this kind of DevOps scenarios? Anybody doing things with SaltStack, Jenkins? Maybe, maybe not. Okay. We'll talk a little bit about where we're going there. So we've been working on cloud for a long time. It's not our first. Azure has been in development for quite a long time, and you've been seeing it grow, and you've seen this production platform add and develop new services over time, and we're starting to get some actual credit for it. And the nice thing about this is that we've got some ground to stand on to talk with you about how we might make those services available in lots of places in addition to our data centers, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So a point of view I'd like you to think about throughout this presentation is that we view cloud as a model, not a place. It describes a common abstraction layer. It describes a common deployment model. It describes a common set of services. It describes the world that an application needs to live in. And as long as you can deliver all of those things in a particular place, you can move that application to that place. So, what does the world look like for us today in terms of Azure? Actually, this morning, Scott talked about 38 data centers, which is four more than the slide indicates. These are places where we've put points of presence of our variants of Azure, meaning the stuff that Microsoft owns and operates and delivers to you, around the world. But we have a grander vision for what Azure can be to you that includes places where Azure doesn't exist, including potentially hundreds of service providers being able to deliver Azure services out of their data centers, and potentially thousands of you as enterprises to be able to deliver Azure services on-prem as needed. Now, the real question is, why? So let's talk about this a little bit. So there's lots of reasons why bringing a public cloud model on-premise becomes relevant. There are business and technical considerations. Some of these are data sovereignty issues. Some of these might be application architecture issues that make us want to do this on-prem. Application flexibility, the desire to run applications in my own data center when I can and maybe use cloud resources when I need extra scale. And also inadequate alternatives, meaning if you're running private clouds on-prem, if you want to turn it into an abstracted services model, you have to write all of that on top of that private cloud, so you become a software developer. So let's dig a little bit deeper into the business and technical considerations. Obviously, regulations are one of them. In the United States, we've got a ton of them, and I talk to a lot of ISVs who serve customer types in the United States, particularly in healthcare and the financial organizations. But just out of curiosity, how many of you work in an industry where you're a little bit reluctant to put some of your data in the public cloud? Yeah, thought so. So that's certainly part of it. Data sovereignty is another issue. There are a lot of government regulations that specify rules about where data that belongs to an entity in country can reside, and usually that's constrained to that country boundary. And as you know, we do this. We have actual purpose-built versions of Azure. We have one in China. We have one in Germany. And these are publicly available to for you to use. So data sovereignty becomes part of it. Customization is another. And latency, the application architectures. Many of us, I've talked to a lot of customers. I've talked to a lot of ISVs who support customers in, for example, the manufacturing space. It's pretty common to find that you'll talk to a company that might have 30 or 40 years worth of continuous process automation data that they've accumulated into some gigantic store. And I mean things like in the many hundreds of petabyte size. And yes, we'd be very happy to move all of that data into Azure and make it available to the Cortana Analytics Suite and our online machine learning tools in order for that company to delve into that data set and glean new insights and discover new things about it. And, of course, turn around and give them a very large storage bill the next month. But when you get to data scale that size, we don't really want to pipe it in through a wire. It's probably going on a truck. But there's something else that will happen to it. That data is not data by itself. It comes with applications. And not all of those applications are necessarily going to move to the cloud. And so consequently, we introduce a data access or latency from the applications that are running on-premise that were custom-built for whatever store they had on-premise to the stores that are in the cloud. So maybe there's a model where we could actually bring services to the data instead of bringing the data to the services in the public cloud. So application flexibility is another big piece. Obviously, as we begin to rewrite applications or we upgrade applications to be more modern and take advantage of RESTful APIs and understand that not all of their services reside in the same place, we create a model of flexibility that allows these applications to move and scale. So, how do we do that in the context of regulation, data sovereignty, and the need to have access to some services that will remain on-premise for a period of time? So fundamentally, what it boils down to is, I think we already agree that hybrid cloud is a reality today. When we talk to customers and partners about this, we find out that pretty much everyone agrees or has a plan for building and using services or integrating services on-prem and off-prem. So how are we bringing this to you? And that's through this new, fundamentally different hybrid cloud platform called Azure Stack. So what is it? Has anyone seen one yet? Just a few of you. Well, maybe I should show one a little later today. You'll be surprised. It looks exactly like Azure because, for the most part, it is. We'll delve a little bit deeper into what it is and isn't. But fundamentally, it's the ability to deliver Azure services in your data center on a floor tile that you own. Now, there are things that are different about it, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So first off, what is a hybrid platform? If you look at cloud model, we're really talking about end user experiences. Those of you that log into Azure, you're real familiar with these. You potentially do this with the portal, you do this with the UI tools, you do this with PowerShell, and other DevOps tools that allow you to manipulate the services that are delivered by Azure Resource Manager. Well, that's really our version of the cloud application model. These are all layered on top of actual infrastructure services, software that takes a pile of hardware and turns it into a compute service, or takes a pile of hardware and turns it into a storage service that allows you to take advantage of it in your applications. And of course, it actually runs on real hardware somewhere. So how we turn this into Azure, we kind of talked about this, the user experiences that you use, the portal, PowerShell, DevOps tools. Azure Resource Manager is our common abstraction layer. If there's a resource that you're going to use as a tenant in Azure above the abstraction layer, you're going to get it from the Azure Resource Manager. Azure Resource Manager itself is delivered on top of IaaS and PaaS services, and there are many of them. In fact, fundamentally, Azure is a production platform that has hundreds of these services running at any given time, and those would instantiate the endpoints that you use in the Azure Resource Manager. And of course, as we said, it all runs on real infrastructure somewhere. So what's different with Azure Stack? Well, it's got the same user experiences at the top. In fact, the contracts are the same. And Azure Resource Manager up to the portal has exactly the same contracts as it does on Azure. So underneath that, we have IaaS and PaaS services, things that we deliver up to the Azure Resource Manager. And of course, it runs on hardware. Now, fundamentally, this creates a single ecosystem where you have one deployment model, you have one development model, and basically one application model across both environments because they're the same. ARM is ARM, portal is portal, and everything in the abstracted space is consistent. In fact, our key mantra for all of the engineering work that we do on Azure and all of the decisions that we make about Azure Stack and all the decisions we make about Azure Stack is consistency with Azure. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some implications of that a little bit farther on in the slide. So fundamentally, what we want to do is enable you to write Azure-compatible software, which runs in a common ecosystem delivered by Azure, and Azure as instantiated by a service provider, or Azure as instantiated in your data centers, on top of resources that Azure makes available, which includes things in Microsoft data centers and things in your data centers. And specifically, we're talking about integrated systems. Quick question. Has anyone deployed the Azure POC, Azure Stack POC? A few of you? And what hardware are you running that on? Anybody? Virtual machine. Okay. I have seen that. It's hard for us to support, but I have seen it. We also have a spec on Azure.com, which is where you go to get this, by the way, that tells you a set of hardware that you can actually deploy it on when you actually run it on bare metal. But the interesting thing about this is when we actually deploy in production, there's a couple of ways that we could do this. With the POC, you have the ability to buy any hardware that you want and deploy it as long as it meets the specification that is in the validator. There's actually a validator that will check your hardware and say, do you have enough in order to deploy an Azure Stack? However, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of customization, and more importantly, there's a lot of places that we can make mistakes. So we've gone a far more, appliance route, and it's all based on integrated systems. So production systems for Azure Stack in your data center will be delivered by an integrated systems vendor. So this will be an appliance and an engagement which lands one on one of your floor tiles from one of three initial providers. There's another one that's gone public. Does anybody know? Cisco, yeah, thank you. So Dell, HPE, Lenovo, and Cisco will have orderable systems sometime in the future here. I don't know the actual dates, you can ask me, I still won't know them. But the point about this is to make it simple. And there's actually a lot of pieces in flight. When you look at a full Azure Stack in hardware, it's the servers, it's the storage, it's the networking, top of rack routers, all the configuration to connect those routers into your networks and your data centers, and all of the things that are necessary to make those services contained within the stack visible to you publicly within your data center. So it's pretty complex. So we've decided to put it together into an appliance-like experience. So ultimately, we're bringing Azure services to your data center. And the best way to think about Azure Stack is that it's not a private cloud. It's an instantiation of a public cloud that runs in your world. And there's a couple things about that that are probably relevant to call out. One of which is, if you look at Azure, and your experiences with Azure are as a tenant, meaning you can ask us what hardware delivers a D3 V2 instance in Azure, and we probably won't tell you. We might, but it doesn't matter. Because what matters is that we deliver the service that a D3 V2 contract requires. And what we're talking about here is the land of abstracted infrastructure. Now, I speak most of the time with ISVs. And I speak with a lot of ISVs that are used to working with us in the Windows world. Whereas when you instantiate a Windows server on a piece of hardware, you have the keys to everything in Windows. So you can put anything in the host that you want, you can do anything to it you want, and we have certain development models that support that. When you look at Azure, we don't give you the keys to Azure. We have the keys to Azure. It's something that we do. What we offer are the services of Azure. The thing that I want you to carry forward from this is that Azure Stack is like Azure. It supports abstracted infrastructure. So even though you know what hardware it's running on, because you know it's on an order form, it's got a logo sitting in that rack that's in your data center, you don't manage it or treat it or develop to it like you would a Windows server that you would have on-premise. You develop to it and treat it and manage it like we do with Azure. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So what does this give you? This gives you consistency across clouds in experiences, operations, automation, application, and ultimately the tool sets that you use to develop modern cloud-enabled or cloud-ready applications. So you are now the cloud provider. So what does that mean? You have consumers that you will service. You will create plans and profiles and offers in an Azure Stack, just like we create plans, profiles, and offers in Azure. You will add tenants and subscribers who will log in and have RBAC access, gated access to resources that you've enabled for them. As a cloud provider, you can provide capacity and services to support that automation both internally or externally. In fact, the two of the key constituencies that we're talking to at the GA timeframe and that we've designed for our GA timeframe are cloud service providers, hosters, managed service providers who offer some services out of their data centers. They may also offer services out of our data centers and competing clouds. And enterprise customers who are offering services out of their own data centers. So Azure Stack creates a model for new ideas. So, for example, when you develop a mobile application, you could develop part of that application running against data that resides in your data center and take advantage of Azure scale components. So, for example, if you want to scale to web size with a web application, use the scale capacity in Azure. When you're developing the application, you're just going to refer to endpoints that exist in Azure Public, versus those endpoints which might exist in Azure on-premise. There's lots of different ways to think about hybrid patterns. And as we go farther down this path with you and learn more about how enterprises consume it and how software developers develop to it, we'll have more patterns to talk about. Now, fundamentally, everything we've talked to you about at this point is really geared for anyone who uses Azure and potentially is a consumer of Azure Stack. When I originally wrote the presentation, I was really framing it toward software developers. So, quick question. How many of you develop software that you sell to or license to somebody outside your company? A few. And the rest of you, are you enterprise operators? When you develop software, it's for your internal constituents and customers? Yes? No? Maybe? Okay. So, even though I'm saying ISV frequently, everything that we're going to talk about from now on applies to developers for external licensing or developers for internal use. So I'll do my best to try and categorize things along the lines of developing for a cloud customer of any type, whether they're internal or external. So let's talk about some of the opportunities that exist in Azure Stack. So when you look at the model of delivering a public cloud on-premise, there's some obvious things that come to mind. First off, you can write Azure-compatible software. You either are an internal or external SI building services and deploying building services and engagements for your internal or external customers. You could also potentially be a hoster. And if you're an enterprise with this stuff in your data center, you are operating like a modern hoster. And all of this is to deliver Azure services out of a data center you own. So these are real devices that land on real floor tiles in the real world. So the vision that we're putting forward, and there's four classes of partners that we talk about internally, so I'll share with you what those are. So independent software's job is to write Azure-compatible software. System integrators are about creating engagements and solutions that land on Azure Stack. Managed service providers actually operate clouds and sell access to services in a multi-tenanted fashion. And then they may actually sell services actually not only out of their data center with Azure Stack, but our data center. We actually have a very commonly used program called the CSP program, which actually allows them to sell services out of Azure's data center as well. Well, this is useful when you work in a region that has an Azure data center. But if you remember back to the slide that I showed that had all the locations where we have Azure data centers, and there were wide swaths of the world that we lit up with green dots and then more with yellow dots, the whole point about this is to enable these folks also to deliver Azure services out of their data centers in the similar program. And then we've got the class of hosters that we're used to dealing with. But the big message we want you to take away is we're giving you a model to invest once. It's one cloud deployment model. It's one cloud development model. So what's your mission? Developing Azure-compatible software. So Azure Stack doesn't GA until mid-calendar 2017. That's public information. We've shared that multiple times before. So what can you do now? And should you wait for us? And the answer is no, because you can develop marketplace solutions that we're going to talk about Azure marketplace solutions today and how that applies to the Azure Stack marketplace. And we're also going to talk about management integrations. So let's get started. So we're going to talk about marketplace and a concept called syndication. So right now, we're going to talk about the Azure App Marketplace. Why an app marketplace? Why would you do it? And it's pretty straightforward. Discovery, transact, deploy. It makes it very easy for your customers and your tenants to find solutions they need, deploy them, and then pay you for them. And in Azure, we support multiple payment models, multiple business models. We have the bring-your-own-license model, where basically a customer who wants to use your software will engage with you for a transaction, and they will pay us for the infrastructure to run that software. Also in Azure, we have the pay-go models, which allow your software to land in a customer already licensed, and the customer pays us, and we turn around and pay you on the back end. So those are the sell-through models. In all of these, they are revenue aligned with Microsoft. That's an important thing for those of you who are trying to work with our field. Very, very important thing. So the app marketplace is the common metaphor that we use in Azure for any application that can be deployed in abstracted infrastructure. So for the most part, these are applications that you develop today. They probably live in a virtual machine, one or more. If they live in a single VM, they may actually only take advantage of the resources that are contained within that VM. More modern and updated applications may also consume some Azure PaaS services or other things delivered in the public cloud. So that might create some dependencies that we'll talk about a little bit farther in the future, or farther in the presentation. So how do you populate a marketplace? So does anybody have an offer in Azure Public today? You do? What do you have?
It's my company I work for, Veeam Software.
Veeam? Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with Veeam. So Veeam actually does have a tenant-facing backup solution, actually. So it backs up workloads from within a tenant subscription to Azure Storage, and I think there's a SaaS service that you guys have that you have multiple choices where you can back things up. So this is a classic case of customer deployable software. This might be deployed on a box in a data center somewhere, or it can be deployed as a virtual appliance in an Azure public cloud. This is a perfect candidate for this concept of syndication. Actually, it's fully contained, right? Within a single VM, it just uses the resource of the VM. And then you have agents that back up the guest workloads, correct? Okay. So this is a perfect candidate for something that we call syndication. What syndication enables is for you to say, you know, as an Azure Stack operator, and I'll show you an Azure Stack here in a minute, there's lots of applications for Azure already in Azure. But Azure Stack is mine. It has my marketplace in it, a private marketplace that I'm allowed to put in it whatever I want. So that's the concept called private loading, or side loading is the other term you'll hear the engineers talk about fairly frequently. And there's a UI for both of these. The UI for private loading, you take an Azure package, you run through some configuration blades, you add some information and a template, and voila, you have an item in your gallery, in your marketplace, that one of your tenants can now see and then deploy into their tenant subscription, or via syndication, actually reach up into Azure's marketplace and enumerate a list of eligible packages. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. So the marketplace, this is what an example of what the Azure marketplace looks like. It's probably pretty familiar to you. This is what the marketplace has looked like now for a year and a half, maybe a little longer. Azure Stack looks identical. And the only difference is the things that are populated in the Azure Stack marketplace aren't necessarily the same things that come from Azure Public, but there can be overlap, and that's really what syndication is about. So it's a standardized application delivery model across Azure and Azure Stack. So what does that tell you you should be doing right now? Well, if you're going to develop Azure software, deploy it in Azure today, because as a software developer, you can create your own marketplace offers, and you can monetize with Azure customers today, and as Azure Stack comes available, you'll be able to capitalize on those platforms as well. And so how does this work? Fundamentally, there is a new service in Azure called the Syndication Service, and Azure Stack has a UI that connects to that service and enumerates lists of eligible packages that you can then, as a cloud operator, download to your stack and turn around and deploy in your marketplace to offer to your tenants. So it makes things a lot simpler. So the flow is very, very simple. As a software developer in the licensing space, if you're an enterprise developer, this model's different for you, and I'll explain that in a second. But as an ISV who wants to deliver my software and license my software to third parties, publish to Azure now. Because you can monetize on customers with it today. The cloud administrator will subscribe to these, deploy them in their marketplace, and then you can transact additional customers in the same fashion that you do on Azure Public. We've been kind of public with some partners that are working with us early on this. These were public at Ignite in September. This list is actually growing rather rapidly. So, in summary, what is syndication? It's a means to connect the marketplace in Azure Public and certain eligible packages with the marketplace that exists on an Azure Stack. It's delivered via syndication. The customers for this are tenants of Azure Stack. So these are folks that actually deploy workloads into actual tenant subscriptions on Azure or Azure Stack. And the person that you're transacting with is the tenant. Now, there's another model for application types, and these tend to be applications that help us talk about owning stack or overcoming buying hurdles to clouds. There's a story I like to tell because it seems like every customer that I talk to has the same experience. When they first got started with cloud, they got really excited about that speed, agility, and sort of economic value that came with cloud. And they needed 100 machines for 2 weeks. And they logged in and swiped a credit card and deployed 100 machines for 2 weeks and had a wild success. And they're all excited about it. And then 6 months later, the conversation is, yeah, my first bill was $300. My second bill was $2,000. My third bill was $85,000. And they've got the CFO of their company going, what are you doing? And one of the challenges and one of the sort of software spaces that emerged to help this falls into this category that I call management integrations. And there's a whole breadth of partners out there that you can work with that help you with financial situational awareness in the cloud. They all have cloud in their name. So there's companies that Microsoft works with. Many of these work with every public cloud provider that are out there, Amazon, Google, us. The point is, these are products and platforms that live maybe on cloud. Doesn't really matter. But they talk to the cloud through the abstracted APIs that are available to learn about your usage and your bill in a particular cloud. And then they do their analysis, provide their insight, and help you do things like answer the question, are you buying properly? Are you buying the right kinds of instance types for the workloads that you're running? And they help you with that optimization. So the other management or the other sort of software development model that we'll talk about today is this. And the ability to build integrations that manage or work with and help enhance the owner experience. And the key reason that I call them out separately is the customer type for this is different. It's the actual Azure Stack operators who buy these. If it's in Azure, it's the actual Azure, usually the financial organization in the case of the cloud spend monitoring tools that I talked about. So these are really the owner operators of clouds, not the tenants of clouds themselves. So the question then is, where do you start? So, this is an animation. I didn't realize it was an animation. Oh, there we go. So there are some things to do today. First and foremost is deploy an Azure Stack POC. It's freely available. We have no charge for it. We will continue to have the Azure Stack POC available past GA. It deploys on a single server, can deploy in a VM. And that's really for the dev test scenarios. Kick the tires, understand what it's like to actually own an Azure device on premise, and begin to develop and test your applications against it to see what you need to do to be ready for Azure Stack. You can find this at azure.com, and I have a set of links and resources here that we'll talk to. The second thing is develop to Azure today. It's the same model. ARM is ARM. All of the things that we do on the top of the stack will be the same. Now, where there will be differences is going to be in the services that are available on Azure Stack versus the services that are available in Azure. So how many of you know how many services are in Azure today? Yeah, it is lots. I don't know. And I work for the company. But it's hundreds. Azure Stack is led by Azure. So you can reasonably expect to see that it will be some percentage of the services that are available in Azure Public. Now, when we talk about Azure Stack, we've shown the production nodes at Ignite last year. I don't know if anybody, Ignite US, I don't know if anybody saw them, but they're racks, and they're four nodes. Well, that's a pretty sizable difference in scale from an actual node of Azure, which is many hundreds of servers and lots of racks, but you need cranes to move those around versus something you can, you know, kind of push around a floor tile by yourself. So what you can reasonably assume is there's hardware in Azure that you're not going to have. You might be able to produce instance types in Azure that you won't be able to produce on Azure Stack. But there are also services in Azure that operate at a scale that we will not have on Azure Stack at GA. So as we get closer and farther into this path to GA from this point on, we'll be able to talk to you about what services we'll have in more detail and give you some planning ideas. But right now, the basic services for IaaS, which are compute, networking, and storage, are available in the POC that's on Azure.com right now. Our current point in time is TP2. And you can figure out where we're going from there as we get to GA. Hopefully we'll have some news for you soon. So deliver your solutions in the Azure Marketplace. So for those of you who are developing software to license externally, get your offers published. You are already doing the work you need to do to get ready for Azure Stack. And as we said, GA will be mid-calendar 17. There is an organization that you can join that will help you with some of this communication. It's a global enterprise cloud alliance that we host. There's a link here, and it's free, so there's no charge for it to join as a software developer. It is specifically for ISVs, though. So if you're an enterprise operator, there are different organizations that you can join to get this information. I've also included some links to getting started places. The top one is the actual Azure website for Azure Stack itself. You will find the POC bits there. You'll also find documentation for it there. You'll also find the specification for what hardware you need to run the POC. But the one thing I can tell you about the POC is that it will never be updatable. What that means is, when we come out with a new version of the POC, you pave over the old one. So you can't really run this in production, and we encourage you not to. I think you'll be able to get these decks, so this is available to you whenever you want. We also have the documentation site, there's blogs, Channel 9, and we've also published a wealth of tools on GitHub. So there are tools for making it easier as DevOps folks to interact with Azure and Azure Stack. There's also the validators that are up there. For those of us that are developing software in Azure Stack, we even have a template validator, which will take a look at your Azure public offering and tell you whether or not you've sort of been within the guardrails of what we can support on Stack at any given point in time. In fact, that gives you a hint about how we should think about Azure Stack. When you look at a service go into preview on Azure, it's probably not going to be on Stack, because I said before, we're led by Azure. So it has to be a production service on Azure. Once it becomes production on Azure, you can realistically expect that if it's one of the services we can bring to Stack, that it will show up in preview mode on Stack. And so you'll see services on Azure Stack just like you do on Azure on a production platform. Both of them can be production. You'll have preview services and production services at the same time. So it'll work just like Azure. So we have a validator that actually will help you look at your templates and know whether or not your application in its current form is really ready for what's available on a given Stack instance. So visit Channel 9. Head to the TechNet Eval Center. Obviously visit the Microsoft Virtual Academy. These are other places to continue your path here. One of the things I thought I would do, because I have one, is show you an Azure Stack. Now, there's some things that are different about Azure Stack, first and foremost of which is it has an admin experience. Azure has an admin experience, too. It's just something we use and we don't make available to you. Actually, generally, we use PowerShell for all of it. I don't know how much UI there is in it. At the moment, I've logged into an Azure Stack. This is an admin role, and you'll notice that there's some things in here that seem kind of interesting, like getting a subscription. If we look at the marketplace and go to create new items in the Azure Stack marketplace, you'll see it looks pretty much like the Azure marketplace. Of course, now it's going to be slow. But there are some things that you don't see in the Azure marketplace. You guys don't get to create tenants, offers, and plans. But yet these are gallery items in the admin experience within Azure Stack. There are virtual machines and availability sets, data and storage, some of it, networking, some of it. There are some custom things, which is, in this case, a solution template, which are multi-VM solutions, and then some security and identity things. And this is a default environment. So what I want to do is jump over to the tenant experience, which looks pretty much like you would expect a tenant experience to look in Azure Public. The big difference is the things in the marketplace are less, and you'll notice that we don't have plans and profiles and offers and tenants as creatable items here. But the rest of it's available. So as an Azure Stack operator, the first thing I need to do let's create an offer, and this is an absolutely virgin stack, so we'll go create one. So we'll call this Ignite Demo Default. Oh, I've got to create a plan first. Sorry. You can't create offers until you have a plan to attach them to. All right. So Ignite Demo Default, we're going to create a resource group for this. Everything gets stored in a resource group. We have to decide what services we're going to deploy. I'm going to enable subscriptions, storage, actually everything, Key Vault, and Compute. We then have to go in and set up quotas for these, and you can create multiple plans and profiles, just like for multiple customer types that you would like. I'm going to use all the defaults. Oops. I don't want to create a new quota. I want to use the default. Oh, I haven't created some. Oh, there we go. There's the delegated provider quota. Took a while to enumerate. So now we have all of the quotas and all of the services that we're going to offer as part of this plan, and that's going to start deploying. Now, in classic Azure fashion, this may take some time, so I'm not going to go farther with the demo here, but ultimately, this gives you an insight to the fact that you as a cloud operator have some additional work that you'll do in the Azure Stack world, and you can actually automate all of these things with software. So you can do this with PowerShell scripts. You can do this with a variety of activities in the similar model that you do today in terms of automating applications on Azure today. So I know there's this opportunity to win a Spark After Dark drone pilot pass by completing out your evaluation. Definitely do that as soon as you can so it's all fresh in your mind. And with that, I'm willing to spend some time answering questions that I might have created in your mind in this presentation. So does anybody have any thoughts or questions they want to ask? And actually, I think we have some microphones that we can spread around and give to you because we are recording these and we'd like to capture your questions as well.
Back in slide number 4 or 5, what were the two asterisks next to two of the services in Azure Stack? There are two caveats there.
They're probably related to the fact that there are services that we have available at different points in time, and they may have been ones on the bubble for the point in time that we're at right now. So we're still pre-GA, which means we don't have everything that we're going to have at GA. Yes, sir. You have a question? I'm sorry.
Yeah. What PaaS services will you guys be offering? Like, will you have like SQL or SharePoint?
That's a great question. Some of which I can't quite answer at the moment. I will tell you what is available at the TP2 timeframe. These are the IaaS services. So compute, network, and storage. You saw Key Vault up there. What else did we have? I think that's kind of it. So those are things that are on our radar scope. One thing that we will likely not have because of scale is SQL PaaS. We will have some things to talk about. And actually, I should state, because we're talking about some things that I probably can talk to you about under NDA, and this is a public forum, I am going to make myself available all week long to have private one-on-one conversations. So if you want to contact me after the session, I'll be happy to set up some time to meet with you one-on-one. Yes?
You mentioned virtualizing a POC.
Is that supported on VMware or Hyper-V or any more details around that?
Virtualizing.
A proof of concept? Did you mention that was possible to run it?
Yeah, way? It's actually not something we support. I know people have done it, and what I would encourage you to do is to check the forums on how they're doing it. But if you have problems with it and you call us, we're going to tell you to deploy on bare metal. But I do know people have had success with it. And it check the public forums. So the question up front was about licensing information, and unfortunately not today. But we will when we make the GA announcements, we'll have information for you. Yes, sir?
Just wondering what details you have on the Cisco announcement, if any?
Actually, to be perfectly honest, I don't know. It literally happened Thursday of last week. So I can tell you where we are with the initial vendors. The first three that were with us. And I suspect that the Cisco announcement basically is just a shift in time for the same experiences that you would have with HPE, Dell, or Lenovo. So they've actually demoed technology publicly. I would expect Cisco probably will do something soon and similar. But they're a little bit behind the first three. So that's really fundamentally, that would be the only difference in my mind. Another question over here.
Just on a SQL as a service you mentioned, that was available with VAP. And I'm wondering, what's the reason? Is there complexity around putting it into stack? Is that why you pulled it? And the question is coming from Oracle just announced their own version. So they have Cloud at Customer and Exadata. So from competitive perspective, not launching SQL, can you share some background why that decision was made?
Well, it's not that the decision's been made. There's a point in time right now. We don't have that available at TP2, and I can't tell you about things that are coming because those roadmaps haven't been laid out publicly yet. So think about it that way. SQL, though, is very important to Microsoft. I can say that. So let me put it that way. One thing you can do right now is you actually could try to instantiate a SQL instance in a stack, in a VM. But I don't think we can provide an instance type big enough at the TP2 timeframe for a typical SQL server.
And just a quick one on the Cisco announcement. I understand you don't have that much detail. The announcement in the press was around UCS, the compute platform. However, Cisco usually pushes the NetApp and Nimble storage and other vendor storage products like FlexPod and SmartStack. And they have their own HyperFlex architecture. So it's two questions. Do you know if Cisco is planning to launch on Converged? And the other one is with hyperconverged, like HyperFlex and especially Nutanix, is there a reason why hyperconverged platforms are not included in stack at this stage?
So I don't know the specifics about the Cisco announcement, but what I can tell you is in general what we're doing with the integrated partners. So the big thing about Azure Stack, and we've been completely public about this, is that it will come as an integrated experience, which means the compute, the storage, and the networking. So when you get a rack of this stuff, it comes with the top of rack switches and everything internally. The storage for it is actually storage spaces direct. So it's a common storage pool that we deliver multiple storage types out of and very high IO rates. And I think it reasonable to assume that there will be varying stamps, some that might be more disk heavy, some that might be more memory and compute heavy, depending upon the intent for that stack. Now, the other side of the coin is stacks will be scalable in these unit chunks and will have more information about that as we get closer to GA and be able to share a lot more detail.
So I guess if we run like a mechanical software defined platform in a way to modify.
Well, I think the thing to take away from where we are with Azure Stack and what we are delivering with Azure Stack is that the things you've done where you've operated private clouds, where you've worried a lot more about the infrastructure and how those resources were configured and managed, much of that will actually be done as part of the stack management experience. Now, that being said, it's a real device landing in a real data center on a real floor tile, and at some point, some part of it's going to emit smoke. So how do we alert you about that? So there's things coming that we'll be able to talk about as we get a little bit closer to GA that help with sort of the management and ownership experience of a device where some of the control has been removed and put into the abstraction layer. So that's why I said at the beginning of the presentation that you really need to think about it like Azure, which is a lot more like the abstracted interfaces. So the types of things that you think about when you're operating your Nutanix environment may be a little bit different.
Is it a roadmap to coming from like private IP providers?
Great question. So the question was about...
Providing multi-tenancy as an ISP model. Mm-hmm. And I guess adding this stack in it, which means it would become one of the tenants, I suppose, right?
So you wouldn't necessarily take those environments and install them into stack.
What I want to do is I'm thinking like I will probably migrate my environment off from current platform to suck it into the stack when you release mid-July, something like that.
So the question is about how to move from an existing environment that supports multi-tenancy and so on and become bring those customers into stack. So there's a couple of ways to think about it, and we're working with software partners to help build software to make experiences like that a lot more seamless. I hadn't really planned to talk about this too much, but...
Is there something that Microsoft actually embraced that they're seeing that as a customers, existing customers?
Oh, it's a good question. We do see it a lot. In fact, almost every hoster operator that I talk to has a similar question to yours, which is I've got an existing hardware infrastructure. I've got existing customers and an existing service delivery model. How am I going to integrate Azure Stack into that?
Right, yeah.
And then as I weigh where I want to move my customers, if I decide that Azure Stack is the model that I'd really like to embrace, how do I start bringing those customers over to Azure Stack? And there is work being done, as I said, in the partner community to develop some solutions to facilitate that, to facilitate both coexistence with foreign environments and actually allow foreign resources to be brought into Azure Stack as a first-party principal, so they actually look like an Azure Stack resource and allow you to have gateways to things like that. So we have some partners that are doing things like that. And we'll be able to share public information about that not too far away from now. The other thing that we're seeing is how to coexist with some of our existing clouds, because this is not our first at bat for an on-prem cloud scenario. As you know, we've had probably many of them, and many of you have probably had all of them. So we have our own on-prem Hyper-V sort of software-defined data center models. We have Windows Azure Pack, which was a previous product to Azure Stack that led more directly to Azure Stack, which was fundamentally a set of system center tools and portals and software that ran on top of System Center 2012 and Server 2012, R2, I think. That you could put together and deliver IaaS services. And it was fundamentally IaaS services, so the basic compute network storage services. We also built some very large product that used WAAP, the CPS products that you may be aware of. These were container class, need a crane and a very large place to plug in ping pipe and power and drop one of these things in. And you had a fairly large scale Windows Azure Pack solution. Now, those were delivered as an integrated system. They were delivered by a vendor that included the entire engagement for hardware, software, and actually installing it. So we've had those models. So the question is, what are we going to do about those environments? So we have some stuff that we'll be talking about not too far in the distant future. We actually have work that we're doing first party, and we also have some partners that are doing some things in that space. So as we get closer to GA, we'll have a lot more detail, and I wish I could give that to you right now. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Would the images the images you deploy with the Azure Stack, can you upload your own SOLI into it? And how does it integrate with the internal network? Like, can I add it to an internal domain as easily? Or?
So Azure Stack Proof of Concept, which is the TP2 product that we're talking about right now, is fully self-contained inside its own network. You can VPN gateway into that, but actually making services that are delivered inside Azure Stack POC available on your network is hard to do. That being said, people have done it. So I would look to the forums for that. It's for the dev test scenario. In fact, the people that have done it, in fact, I think of one. He's an MVP out of the Netherlands. The reason he did it was so that his continuous integration environment could actually deploy and publish images to VMs running inside Azure Stack POC. So that's been the common model that I've seen. So the answer is yes, but it's not exactly the easiest thing. Now, when we get to production services, when you actually land a production Azure Stack in your data center, part of that engagement is to connect it to your network. So that's absolutely true. Other questions? Well, thank you very much for your time. I encourage you to go to azure.com/product/AzureStack. I think it's AzureStack. To take a look at the POC, the documentation for it, and get started with it. You can write software with it today. If you have Azure Stack offerings today, I'd love to have conversations with you about how to make your products ready for Azure Stack and get you started on that path. Syndication is something that we are going to be lighting up in a preview mode relatively soon. So we've demoed it publicly. It was actually in Jason Zander's keynote speech at Ignite in September of this past year. And so it's very, very real, and we'd like to get you ready for it so that you can start addressing Azure Stack customers at GA. Thanks for your time.